Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. This is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. It is now Monday, March 21st, and we got Matt Lorlander with me. I got Sam Vecini with me. The Sweet 16 is all set, and it's all big brands. Cinderella died this past weekend, in case you didn't hear. What's left, as I wrote earlier today over at CBSSports.com, are six ACC schools, three Big 12 schools, three Big 10 schools, one Big East school, one Pac 12 school, one SEC school, and Gonzaga, meaning the only Sweet 16 team in this NCAA tournament that truly operates outside of the power structure, is a WCC school that was a number one seed in the NCAA tournament just 4 years ago, was a number two seed last year, and has been to six Sweet 16 since the turn of the century. In fact, as I wrote, 13 schools that are in the Sweet 16 also appeared in at least one of the previous three Sweet 16s, and every school in the Sweet 16 entered the season having made the Sweet 16 at least once in the previous 13 years. So Cinderella is dead and gone and dead and gone. Shout out to T.I. and Justin Timberlake. We're going to look ahead to that in just a moment. But first, I want to look back at what was an amazing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the NCAA tournament. Wildest opening weekend I think any of us can remember, perhaps because it was the wildest ever. Norlander, I want to start with you. What was the story of the opening weekend outside of the macro? Holy wow, that was crazy. Is it Michigan State losing to Middle Tennessee? Stephen F. Austin losing at the buzzer in the round of 32 after their beard became incredibly famous? Is it Indiana ending Kentucky's season? Northern Iowa's truly historic collapse that came just 2 days after Paul Jesperson's buzzer beater? Bronson Koenig's game winner from the corner against Xavier? Buddy balling out, taking Oklahoma to the Sweet 16? Or something else that I'm missing? You call it, Norlander. What's the story?
Is that it, GP?
I think that's all I got. I think that's all I got.
Oh, and then the thing is, there's still like so much more.
I know,
like,
right?
Yeah.
Like Iowa barely getting past Temple at the buzzer.
Did you just say there's so much more, and you mentioned Iowa and Temple?
It was Woodbury. Got to give them that.
It was Woodbury, and it was a true buzzer beater. So, yes,
who cares about Iowa and Temple?
Well, that's the thing, is in a normal tournament, that would have been like a top three or four moment. But this was not a normal first weekend of the tournament. And to me, it is Northern Iowa because it gave us the most unlikely buzzer beater, I think, ever. That thing was so casual and so ridiculous on Friday to beat Texas. And that also, what's interesting about that ending is that it was such a frenzied ending. You know, Texas was right there, you know, very ping pong like, and you thought it was going to for sure go to OT after Isaiah Taylor tied the game up. And then it was just almost just like, okay, well, why not? I'll try this. And it was just the smoothest bank shot you've ever seen in your life. You know, just right off and in, and an all-time buzzer beater. And that is, of course, contrasted with the greatest collapse in college basketball history within the terms of the biggest lead with less than a minute to go ever blown by any team. The NCAA does consider the fact that even though they didn't lose the game in regulation, since they lost the game eventually in double overtime, Northern Iowa did to Texas A&M, it is the biggest blown lead in the history of the sport, which is incredible and perhaps a fitting punctuation mark on what probably has to be the most dramatic first weekend ever. We're at three true buzzer beaters already. That ties the record in the expanded modern era. And that doesn't even count the other ones where, like, Notre Dame wasn't a true buzzer beater. You know, Stephen F. Austin had 1.5 seconds to get a shot off. We had a number of those. Cincinnati almost beat the buzzer, but it was the inverse. That dunk, you know, which you didn't mention, that's another thing. Like, Cincinnati almost tied it, didn't quite get it. We've had four or five instances of those where it was a final shot in the final seconds. Like, Little Rock had that incredible three-pointer by Josh Hagans that came with, like, 5 seconds to go. So, to me, Northern Iowa punctuating. I do think it is the best, by the way. And we do. The tournament almost always has an amazing first weekend. Some years we'll randomly get kind of some stinkers, but even in those, it's funny how there's a balance to this, because even in those weekends, we'll usually get one or two small schools that can kind of spice up the second weekend. And here we have all this drama, And yet Gonzaga and Syracuse are the lowest seeded teams. You know, we didn't get Stephen F. Austin breaking through, and we can get to that in a little bit because I was actually there and I would like to share a few scenes from that. But we didn't get that. Obviously, Northern Iowa, we thought it was going with both of those teams. We thought, you know, they were Northern Iowa for sure, just because of the lead. And then Stephen F. Austin, when you, at least to me in the building watching the game, like it just felt like for the final 5 minutes that it was theirs, that they were going to win it. They were taking control. And then, of course, they didn't score over the final 90 seconds. But that's a long way of answering your question, GP. To me, the biggest story that's not the insanity of the entire first weekend, it is Northern Iowa having the highest of highs and the most amazing buzzer beater, and then the worst collapse ever. My question is, will we remember them equally 10, 15, 20 years from now?
No, the collapse. I don't even remember the buzzer beater now. That collapse
That's stupid
insane.
Because the buzzer beater is insane. Like, the buzzer beater is ridiculous. You remember the buzzer beater. Like, don't say
the buzzer beater. The buzzer beater was so ridiculous that Jesperson tried to heat check from half court in overtime.
Let me tell you something about half court shots. We see them all the time. You've seen a million half-court shots.
Don't see
life.
Them in the tournament from half-court to win games.
Let me
games.
Tell you what you never see in the tournament or outside of the tournament. A team blow a 12-point lead with 34 seconds left.
That's like, my point. So will we remember both of these things equally? You think it'll just be the collapse?
Yeah. Okay. No, it won't just be the collapse. We'll also remember the half-court shot, but the collapse completely overshadows the buzzer beater that from 2 days earlier. Completely overshadows.
I agree with that, that it overshadows it. I just think that the whole thing is the story, right? Like the rise and fall of Northern Iowa in like 48 hours. Woo! It's insane the way that happened. I feel bad for Ben Jacobson. I feel bad. Like there are so many ways in that collapse that it could have gone differently, right? Like if the referee doesn't call that phantom foul on Jesperson whenever Alex Caruso is driving to the rim, if the referee calls Wes Washpin being like bumped off of his spot the entire time, right during that turnover to Admon Gilder whenever he tied the game.
If
Matt Bohannon is healthy, this probably doesn't happen because that gives them another ball handler in the game. Like, there's so many different things here, so many crazy things that couldn't have happened, and they all happened like at once. Like, I've never seen something
like
just
do the math on it. How does that even like? Take your best ball handler out of the game. Tell the refs they're not allowed to call any fouls on the other team. Like, how do you still blow a 12-point lead with 34 seconds to go? Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I've never seen something like
that. No, the reason you've never seen something like it is because it's never happened. It's never happened. Nobody's ever seen anything like it.
Yeah, like even the Maryland Duke thing in the last minute, like in what, 2001, I think that was.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even that like remarkable as what we saw in this Texas A&M.
Not even close. The Duke,
not even close.
Duke Maryland one. I mentioned this to Jeff Eisenberg on Twitter. It's an amazing comeback, but if you watch how it plays out, it's like a 10-point game, and then Duke like gets two quick threes, and that comes right before they score on a possession. So they got like 8 points in 20 seconds. So they were down two by like with like 40 seconds to go or whatever. And this one, it's just like it was a choke. It was not A&M made the baskets. Don't get me wrong. But Northern Iowa, just that was lemon booty to end all lemon booty. That was just insane. And I'm so happy that Sam brought up Jesperson because he wasn't a heat check. He went Roscoe Smith. It was like
that was 100% a heat check.
There were 5 seconds to go. You could have gotten it up into 2-point range for the buzzer beater, okay? But I don't know if it was just the bravado. It was just like, screw it, I'm on a roll, let him go with it. It's not even close. It's all glass. And then Caruso gets the board, right? And then his shot is even further away on the other side and was closer to going in. And Jesperson's shot was so early that it had to go the entire length of the court, fall off the board. Caruso got it, have enough time to fully grab and throw it and get it off before the buzzer beat. Huh. It was so freaking weird and bizarre.
I'm glad you called it a lemon booty and choke job because that's what it was. I've heard some people commenting and read some folks writing, like, you know, you got to give the A&M players some credit and blah, 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 blah. Listen, I don't care.
I don't
care if you're playing the Golden State Warriors. If you are up 12, like, and I mean this, if you're Northern Iowa and you're playing the Golden State Warriors, if you're up 12 with 34 seconds to play, there's no way they can beat you unless you help them. It just cannot happen unless you give it to them. And think of the contrast between you know, before this time yesterday, if somebody would have asked, hey, what's the biggest like comebacks in late, you know, NCAA tournament games? But like one of the things that just would jump out to everybody, I think, is the 2008 National Championship game. That was Memphis up 9 with like 158 to go. And that's what we considered amazing. Oh man, they blew a 9-point lead with 158 to go. These dudes blew a 12-point lead with 34 seconds to go. I mean, we were watching it in the studio, and people were like getting up and going to grab something to eat, like the game's over, right? And then you're like, no way, no way, no. And after you say no way about 14 different times at 14 different moments, they're going to overtime. Like, it is incredible, and I felt sick for Ben and for those seniors. I did think it was cool. Not cool, that's not the right word, but I thought it was impressive that – I don't know if you saw the beginning of Ben Jacobs' press conference, of the Northern Iowa's press conference, but he said that the NCAA, you know, they sort of request who they want, right? They can go in there and say, hey, we'd like so-and-so and so-and-so. And they requested 2 underclassmen. I don't remember who, but they were – and Ben said, no. My seniors are going. We're going to do this together. And he brought the seniors out, and they sit there and they took it, every one of them. I think Wes was mostly like just – he looked shell-shocked. Mm-hmm. Jesperson was like, you know, crying. Bohannon, crying. But I thought it was impressive of Ben to not make them go through it like it was waterboarding or something, but like I think he saw some benefit. Perhaps not that they would benefit – nothing they'd benefit from last night, but some long-term benefit to – hey, this happened, and this was awful, and we will be remembered for this forever, and it's not good. But let's go out here and let's go take this. Let's go out and handle it like professionals. And given that we see professionals not handle it like professionals all the time, I thought that was an awesome moment. They turned a really just heartbreaking scene relative to sports, of course, into what I thought was something impressive. I felt sick for them though.
Here's my thing on Northern Iowa, and then I guess, GP, you can take it where you want. But Northern Iowa now has created this, like, they've become a team of march in a lot of ways, because you had Farouk Manesh, obviously, against Kansas a few years back, and they've been in the tournament plenty. You know, they were even a number 5 seed last year, but I think what this year in, you know, Washpin's incredible bounce to win the Missouri Valley title. I mean, that was huge. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, it plays this ridiculously good game against Texas on Friday. It gets the win with just an unbelievable buzzer-beating shot, and now it's on the other end. So to me, it's become the program as of late that can define so much of what we love about March and what can hurt us so much about March, because it's a small school, because it's taken down giants in Kansas, it's had huge buzzer beaters, and now it's just experienced like the worst possible way you could lose. To me, the most painful, like the game that was choked away that still angers me is Gonzaga blowing it with 17 points to UCLA, because that was like UCLA like ripping the life out of Gonzaga slowly but surely, and it was almost like Gonzaga was helpless to stop it. This one was similar to that, but I was more just kind of like, what is actually happening here? Whereas like the Gonzaga one was like, what are you doing? And it just felt inevitable with that one. You just knew that Gonzaga was going to give the game away, and Morrison crying on the floor kind of embodied that. Sure. But this one is, I would put this one number 2 all time, and then maybe Arizona, Illinois. But again, I've said before on the podcast, I actually never saw that game, so I don't have proper context of how that one played out in real time.
You put this one number 2 just because the stakes weren't as high. It was a round of 32 as opposed to a Sweet 16.
Yes. Yeah, and because the draw. It's funny, GP, because I didn't see that Arizona Illinois one, and you didn't see. You were in the building, but you didn't see the
Gonzaga. But I've subsequently seen it. I've watched it.
But like that one just felt. Since it was a bigger deficit. I know it was more time, but UCLA scored, I think, the final 11 points of that one, and it was a Sweet 16 game, and it was just ripping their bones slowly but surely. To me, that was more painful.
Well, the other thing that one did that this one didn't do, with all due respect to the Northern Iowa players, is that one ended the career of a college basketball icon, right? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some Twitter handle out there that tweets at me often, like that's Adam Morrison crying. Like Adam Morrison crying is a thing, and it's a thing because of that moment. Like I don't think
Jesperson crying is ever going to be a thing, right? So the reason the UCLA Gonzaga one resonates so much isn't simply because they, you know, somebody blew a 17-point lead, because that happens basically every NCAA tournament at some point. Like Duke almost blew a 27-point lead the other day to Yale, but it was that they blew a lead in a way that ended Adam Morrison's career and left him on the court crying. Like all of that, the scene, the visual, the thing we can all still see, is part of that moment. But in terms of just pure, holy crap, I can't believe that just happened. I don't see how this one's not number one. I mean, if only because the numbers are the numbers. Up 12, 34 seconds to go.
It's literally. Yeah, no, it's totally valid.
Yeah. Meantime, and this was what's crazy. So we're all sucked into the Northern Iowa A&M game. And meantime, Xavier's blowing its own lead to Wisconsin late Sunday night, right? They're up 9 in the second half, seemingly in control. And then just blow it. And then Edmund Sumner gets called for a charge. Like he went too early. I don't know if he went too early. But like, I mean, with hindsight, he clearly went too early because the result was a charge. And Wisconsin had time to run it back the other way. But either way, Xavier with a 9-point lead late, you're supposed to win. Xavier tied with the ball, 15 seconds to go. Worst case scenario, you're supposed to go to overtime. And instead, they lose on a Bronson Koenig corner three, which was an awesome shot, right? But, like, he should have never been in a position to take the shot. It was just another, not as memorable and not record-setting, but just another, oh, my God, what just happened? And these things came within a couple of minutes of each other on Sunday night. Vicini, I know you watched both of them. That's a Xavier team that, well, here's the other thing. That Northern Iowa team, I don't think any of us thought they were going to the Final Four, right? It was just like, it's a cool story, fun team, Ben's great, but they ain't going anywhere. They lose now. They can either lose now or lose next week, but they ain't doing the whole thing. Xavier is somebody people had penciled into the Final Four maybe, and to watch them go out like that was just, I don't want to keep using the word heartbreaking, but it's the one that comes to mind. It was just bad, a bad deal. And I felt sick for Sumner because
it wasn't a charge.
Well, that's so cool. There's that, right? I mean, it didn't look like a charge to me either. But it is a bang bang play, whatever. But like, you don't get that out of your head, man. Like, I think that kind of. I've told this story before. I don't know if I've told it on the podcast, but like, I don't have big sports moments. You know, I was a good soccer player and a good enough baseball player, right? But that's my career in terms of being an athlete. Like I played high school and I was good enough to start and be whatever, but like I wasn't doing anything past that. And I still remember like striking out in the state championship game when I was 12 years old. You know, like I still remember my last at bat in high school was like state tournament quarterfinals. And I hit into a 6-4-3 double play. And I don't want to say it haunts me, but like it's in my head. It's things that I remember. I really don't remember anything else from when I was 12 except getting called out on a strike three in the state championship game with the tying run at second base. And like, so if that's in my head from a bazillion years ago, in a game that literally nobody else remembers except for me, I'm confident of that. Nobody else in this world remembers that I took a called strike three when I was 12 years old in the state tournament quarterfinal. I bet my parents don't even really remember it. And if that like still in my head, if you're Edmund Sumner, how do you get that out of your head? If you're like, I bet you if Adam were being honest with you, even though he went on to the NBA and he made millions of dollars and all that stuff, like that game, that loss it's with you forever, man. And I hated watching Sumner go through that last night because he's had such a great freshman season, and then it's a turnover and the game's over and your season's over and this might be the best Xavier team he ever plays on.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Nicole Auerbach retweeted a photo of Edmund Sumner
Shout out to Nikki.
Yeah, like right after it happened, like the camera showed Sumner.
Yeah.
And the look on his face was just like it was devastated. Like it was like half like shell shock and just half like, how do you come back from that? You know what I mean? And I feel really bad for all of these dudes like that, because you brought up the idea of these dudes have to live with that forever. Denzel Valentine, I think, and they lost that game. I mean, he said that right after the game. He said, and I quote, but I got something that I'll never forget for the rest of my life, that when you're in this position and everyone's looking at you, you've got to come through. I didn't come through today, and I'll remember that for the rest of my life.
God, I hate that. Like, I hate, you know what? Like, here's the honesty God truth. Because
it sucks.
Because of that, last night, and listen, I think the Billy Kennedy story is an awesome story. I like those guys on that staff. I'll be honest with you. I was rooting for the Northern Iowa kids because I didn't want that collapse on them forever. You know, I know that that's something you have to live with forever. And, like, that's something you remember, that people remember you by forever in a negative way. And so there was a part of me, like, I just wanted to avoid that for them. So I wanted to see them win in the overtime. It sucks, man. I don't like people. I don't wish that on other people, man.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, no one on that, especially, like, no one on that Northern Iowa team is, like, going on to, like, the NBA. You know, like, maybe Wes Washington plays in the D-League for a while and maybe gets, like, a cup of coffee in the NBA. But, like, he's the only one that really has a shot, right? Like, these guys are not your typical, like, guys trying to go to the Sweet 16 as star players. Like, these are your guys who that's really going to fester with, I feel like, right? Like, you know, we could have gone to the Sweet 16, but we lost a 12-point lead with 30 seconds left. That's crazy. And it's the same with these Xavier kids. Like, I feel terrible for these kids. And, you know, like, that Koenig shot was unbelievable. Ooh. And shout out to, I think it was Nigel Hayes. Nigel Hayes, they ran the ball across half court, and then Hayes called a timeout right away. Like, it almost seemed like without his teammates realizing it. So they got to get a play set up with, like, 2 seconds left. It was really smart. Man, it was just a crazy, crazy turn of events in that game that, you know, I was half paying attention to because of what was happening in Northern Iowa.
Right.
The Koenig shot came from the Drew Nicholas corner, as I like to call it, because that was the same camera angle when Nicholas hit it for the winner over Wilmington with Maryland some years back. It was awesome because he hits the shot and then he disappears into the bench. And so the bench guys are, like, on the floor, and he's kind of – there's a great – Chip posted a great video on CBS Sports, our colleague Chip Patterson, who was on the Friday podcast, of course, of the angle that a fan took. He was front row right behind the bench, and Koenig, like, just throws his arms up. He's completely enveloped by his teammates, and it's just really – listen, it would be, you know, the best buzzer beater of most tournaments if it didn't come in the same one where Northern Iowa hit a running – half court bank shot to win the game. It's insane. And as for Wisconsin, a couple quick things. One, Greg Gard, my goodness, you could not do more to earn a job. And he is, he's lived a charmed second half of the season here. He had an emotional moment on the floor afterward where he talked about his father, his late father, who he lost prior to the season, was kind of his guardian angel this entire year. How could you not get emotional, believe in a higher being when you're getting into the Sweet 16, when you're making the tournament in this kind of way, especially with how the season started? So Wisconsin, like, the Xavier thing is so tough to take, but the Wisconsin win, it just is it's the polar opposite. It is such a powerful story and uplifting thing that is why we love this tournament so much, because no one thought this team was going to the tournament. And now it's in the Sweet 16 with just an utterly gorgeous set and buzzer beater to hit and win it. And Koenig said afterward, they run it plenty, and it's basically like a wagon wheel play where it's either him or Hayes that's going to get it, and they practice it. He says, I channel my inner Steph Curry because he kind of runs this action too. I've done it so many thousands of times. When I let it go, it felt good. I thought it was going in. Just such a gorgeous looking play.
Norlander, meantime, you were earlier in the day, before all this went on, the Northern Iowa collapse and the Wisconsin shot, you were in Brooklyn, right? No, where were you?
Yes. Yes, I was, I was in Brooklyn. You thought I was, like, in St. Louis, like, 3 days ago, which was never the case.
I don't know. I can't keep track of you, man. I can't keep track of you. I can barely keep track of myself. But you were there for Stephen F. Austin, right?
Yes. Yes.
What happened? What happened?
Okay.
What happened to the freaking Lumberjacks? Because I had them. They were. Do you know this? Do you know that if they would have just closed, we would have woke up today? And you know what would have been the biggest story in sports?
Yes.
The Lumberjacks.
Yeah.
The Lumberjacks.
Yes. Trust me.
Beard. Yeah. They would have been the biggest story in college. Biggest story in sports right now would be the Lumberjacks. Everybody in the country would be going. Not everybody, but more people, more writers than ever have ever been there in all the years that Stephen F. Austin has existed would be on their way to Stephen F. Austin?
I was ready to write that story and did plenty of back reporting on it, just because I thought they had a really good chance at winning. And to me, from start to finish, like, there have been more memorable endings in this tournament, but for the course of 40 consistent minutes, Stephen F. Austin Notre Dame, I think, is the best game of the tournament so far. But we obviously have a few other nominees for that, and that's what's making this first weekend so amazing. The building was incredible. Just a quick note on Barclays. They need to put the tournament. It's like the Garden has the regionals next year. The tournament should be in New York City as often as you can put it in there, because there's so many people and Sidewalk alumni, and it's such an easy destination. The building was incredible. Even for like Villanova romping Iowa, it was still a good environment. And shout out to Villanova for exercising some demons and not messing around and getting to the second round. As for Stephen F. Austin, I thought it was going to win. It was really in control over those final 5 minutes. You felt like it was theirs. You felt like they weren't going to really do anything to choke it away or anything like that. Notre Dame was obviously putting up such a great fight, and it was very fun. I mean, Demetrius Jackson, my goodness, that dunk, that took the air out of everyone's breath when he threw that down to Lane. It was ridiculous. I loved getting to cover a game like this in person. It to me, you know, I was at the Kentucky Notre Dame game in Cleveland last year. Notre Dame has this ridiculous penchant for incredible tournament games. I mean, the Michigan one, we forget about that one like it's an afterthought, but that was, I mean, Michigan threw haymakers. Notre Dame rallied, played big, and Stephen F. Austin, with how it handled West Virginia, how it came in, Brad Underwood is such a freaking good coach. That is a great staff. Brad Underwood, best of luck at your next gig, man, because there is no shot you should be coaching Stephen F. Austin next year. He's amazing. He has 89 wins through 3 seasons, okay? The only other coach that's ever done that to start his career is a guy named Brad Stevens, and Brad Underwood has matched it. It would have been great for the tournament if Stephen F. Austin had broken through, because, one, it was underseeded. It was the best 14 seed, I think, in the history of the tournament. I mean, pretty much every objectable metric would have told you that, but that's fine. Like, whatever. We've reached a point here where I think people realize that the 14 now, it doesn't mean what it meant in 2003, and certainly not in the 80s and 90s. But Walkup is just such a stud. You know, what's interesting though, is I had a few buddies who follow the sport, and but they didn't know who Stephen F. Austin was. They didn't know who Walkup was. They were like, I got it. Two separate buddies of mine that don't even know each other told me this yesterday. Like, I got to be honest, I kind of wanted Stephen F. Austin to lose, because everyone was turning Thomas Walkup into the Tim Tebow of college basketball. And I didn't even make that connotation whatsoever. But apparently, you know, the love fest. See, I wasn't really watching a ton of TV. I was kind of reporting on the scene. But apparently just like everyone was all in on Austin. And it would have been great. And they should have won. But as you mentioned, GP, or Sam did, with the foul call that was kind of crap against you and I, they had that 50-50. That was right in front of me, man. That was not a foul.
This was not a 50-50 call. Yeah, this was not a foul.
This was not a foul whatsoever on this loose ball. He had the angle on it, and Brad Underwood just looked at the official and went, wow, 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 wow. Like, because it was a brutal call. Okay. And I understand that Stephen F. Austin didn't score in the final 90 seconds. I get all that. Right. It's really rough. That tip in was such a weird play. I mean, Jackson hits the side of the backboard. August can't put it in. And then you got a kid who has not even scored in the game, who braced it afterward.
Hasn't scored in the game. He hasn't scored since March 5th.
Ridiculous. Right. And Bray said, and I was listening on the outskirts of a press horde, so I didn't get to kind of like yell over him and interject. He said he thinks Pfluger has the best vertical on the team, as in better than Jackson. Like, okay, I'm going to take him at his word for that. Just a ridiculous, crazy tip. And I have never seen a team shot more shot. Like, I'm sure Northern Iowa was plenty shocked that game got to overtime. But Stephen F. Austin was just controlling everything it needed to control over those final 4 or 5 minutes, okay? And when it lost, that team was just completely stunned. The locker room afterward, listen, these things are not – like, assistants were red-eyed and crying. It was not easy. Brad Underwood, I have it on a recap thing. He was so awesome at the podium. He was so emotional talking about Walkup. That is the other aspect of this tournament. We've mentioned it every year, and we should mention it every year, GP. It is just – it kills you to see – the mechanisms behind this tournament, the players, the coaching, these are good people that have put in all this effort. They're finally on this huge stage, and it's almost there, and it's ripped from them. And as Sam mentioned, these are not guys, for the most part, that are going to have careers in the pros. Walkup is going to, you know, have a look at the NBA, I'm sure. But it is such a dramatic and heartbreaking thing. Going into a losing locker room every NCAA tournament, I'm going to Chicago. I'm going to have to do it again. It's brutal, man. It is absolutely brutal. I would have loved to have seen the Lumberjacks get in, but you know what? Underwood created a great culture there, and it's a hell of a start to what should be an incredible coaching career. Sorry for the rambling, but that game and that environment in Brooklyn was fantastic, and it was a pleasure to watch Stephen F. Austin get to the tournament three straight years in a row.
I will say, like, even for the guys who do make it to the NBA, like, they never forget about this. Like, I was with Brendan Haywood last night. Brendan, you know, he spent 13 years in the NBA, won a world championship with the Mavericks. Like, he played with LeBron. Like, he's done it all, made a bazillion dollars. And, you know, it's like we're talking about it last night. He's like, yeah, we lost to Penn State. You know, it, like, he remembers the, you know.
I don't even remember that game.
You know, he'll never forget it. You know, like, he knows every detail of it. He knows exactly how it went down, everything. And so I understand your point, and I think it's proper. Like, for some of these guys, this is as good as it ever gets, and it ends so badly and mm-hmm. with such heartbreak. But even for the guys where it does get better after this, you make millions of dollars, you play in the league, like, that's still a sting that, I don't want to say it's always there, but it's always, you always remember the sting. I'll put it that way. How about this? So we've been talking now for 30 minutes, and
I know exactly what you're going to say.
The idea that there is so much craziness that went on that we haven't even mentioned, really, that arguably, and I think probably, the biggest upset in the history of the NCAA tournament happened since the last time we talked as well. I know Michigan State was a 2-seed, but Michigan State had the second best odds, according to Vegas, to win the national championship. Like, people thought they should have been a 1. They probably should have been a 1. Las Vegas thought the only team with better odds to win the national championship in this particular season was Kansas. So Michigan State was second. And no team in the history of college basketball with the second best odds to win a national championship has ever lost its opening game in the NCAA tournament. Like, what we saw Friday was also truly historic, and yet it seems like it's like middle of the pack on the list of crazy things that happened.
Yeah, no, that was wild. The crazy thing about that whole setup was I thought you were going a totally different direction.
How about
that? I think it's crazy that we haven't talked about Indiana, Kentucky yet.
Right.
Like,
well, Indiana, and Tennessee, we will. Because
we will. I know what you mean. The Michigan State thing is so much bigger.
There's a 0% chance we're getting out of this podcast without me talking about Tom Crean winning yet another basketball game. But to me, that was, and we'll get back to it just a second, that's a basketball. It's a big basketball game and a big moment for Tom and two big brands. But that was a basketball game. Cal's going to be fine. Yeah. Kentucky's going to be back in the deal next year. The Michigan State thing, that's really something we've never seen before.
Yep. It was crazy. I think that has an argument for being the best upset ever. I would say that Michigan State is probably the best team to ever be upset in the first round. Maybe not the biggest upset in terms of Middle Tennessee State was a pretty strong 15 seed, but like in terms of losing your first game, Michigan State might be the best team ever. Not only do you have the number 2 overall team in the country, really, you have a national player of the year candidate in Denzel Valentine. You have a Hall of Fame coach likely going in this year in Tom Izzo, who is renowned for getting his teams to perform in March. But you just have the way that entire game went. Like, that was a wire-to-wire win for Middle Tennessee State.
And that's the thing. It didn't even – if you watched it, like, if you just saw the score, you go, whoa. But if you watched it, you're like, yeah, they beat them.
They beat them. They just flat out beat them.
They lined
scored
up
90
them.
Points on the best defensive team in the Big Ten.
Yeah. No, they just lined up and beat them. And every time Michigan State, like, even at the end of the first half and then several times in the second half, you know, Brent Forbes knocks down a shot, Denzel knocks down a shot. You go, okay, here we go. Okay, that's it.
Then Giddey went down and knocked down another one.
I mean, it was unbelievable to watch it. And I, you know, people have argued that Missouri Norfolk State was technically a bigger upset because, like, the point spread was bigger and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Man, shut up. You know, like, I understand the numbers. I understand the numbers, but, like, I don't even care. Like, this is not beating. Like, do you even remember anybody on that Missouri team?
Kim English wasn't.
Denman. Denman was
Marcus
on that team.
Denman, I think Kimmy was. Was Michael Dixon on that team? Like, but that's
Probably was.
We ain't talking about the national, like the probable or at least possible national player of the year. And not only a guy who's going to be a Hall of Fame coach in 2 weeks, but a guy who's like the cliched lame but still joke that, it's January, February, Izzo, April. Like, you know, that's who we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Michigan State, you know, the Big Ten tournament champs, Izzo, Valentine, and then losing your first game in the NCAA tournament. With all due respect to Frank Haith and Missouri and Kimmy and all those guys, this is a different deal. I don't care if the point spread's bigger. A true national championship contender, like the team with the second best odds losing its opening game with a Hall of Fame coach and Denzel Valentine, that's the biggest upset in tournament history.
I agree, and it was very Florida Gulf Coast-like with the way Middle Tennessee won it. As you guys mentioned, it was just they stood up, they threw every punch, they took everything that Michigan State had and had an answer and a run. It was surreal. I was in Brooklyn as that was happening, so I was watching on a stream. It was surreal to watch that. It's special when we get these, like, now we don't get this 15 over 2, but in terms of just a 15 with the Gulf Coast, or occasionally a 14 or 13 or 12. It's not like, oh yeah, the higher seed was kind of just letting the lower seed hang around by 7-10 points until like 4 minutes to go, and then the run came. Every blue moon, we get one of these games where it's like, what on earth is happening right now? Like, this is if you took off the names and one team was wearing blue and one team was wearing white, and you had to guess what was the 2 seed and what was the 15, you would say Middle Tennessee. That group of dudes right there, that's the 2 seed right there, because they looked so good. I agree. A lot of people have gotten really vested in saying that Missouri is the bigger upset. I get it from a technical standpoint,
right?
But you guys laid it all out for every reason. Michigan State, I think, is the best team to have ever lost in the round of 64. Yes, Middle Tennessee is better than Norfolk State was, right, in terms of ratings. But also, let's remember that Norfolk State had a dude on his team that is still playing in the NBA, okay?
Yep.
And Missouri, I can't tell you off the top of my head, but if I had to guess, that Missouri team would have been at best the sixth best odds on favorite to win the title. And it was definitely – it was a trendy – I remember it being a trendy pick, not even to make the Elite Eight that year. So, yes, it was shocking, but this one, I mean, come on. Like, this is –
looked this up in terms of like brackets, you know, posted at CBSSports.com, ESPN.com, wherever? Like,
I was just about to say this.
I bet you more people pick Michigan State than any other team.
Michigan State, 23% of people picked Michigan State to win the title. 64% had them in the Final Four.
Yeah, I bet you.
64%!
GP, it was Kansas. It was Kansas at 26, Michigan State at 23.
Okay, fine. Yeah. So according to Vegas, Michigan State had the second best odds to win the championship. According to the brackets, people thought Michigan State was the second most likely team to win the national championship. I haven't looked it up. I will bet everything I own and all the stuff both of you guys own as well that Missouri wasn't like that year. Missouri wasn't the second best to do anything.
No.
Missouri wasn't the second most picked national champion in the bracket. Like, to me, this is very simple. If you want to try to argue that Missouri-Norfolk State was a bigger upset, what you're really arguing, what you're really rooting your argument in is numbers based on the fact that Norfolk State sucked worse than Middle Tennessee did. But to me, that's looking at it backwards. I understand the numbers. I play with the numbers every day. But this is the team that a lot of people thought was going to win a national championship. I don't know how many people thought that Missouri team was going to win a national championship. It might have been zero. But like a lot of people thought Michigan State was winning the national championship, and instead they were gone by Friday afternoon.
Yeah, and the other thing to remember with that Norfolk State team is they were probably slightly underrated by the numbers just because, you know, they play in the MEAC, and the MEAC is like the worst league pretty much, like, outside of the SWAC.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't sell the SWAC short.
Yeah, it's not.
No,
like
I think
the SWAC,
that's what he is selling the SWAC short. I think that's actually exactly what he's doing.
I feel like
was the worst league in the nation this year, outside of the SWAC, or even including the SWAC.
What?
Yeah.
What's happening to the SWAC? Are they slipping a little bit?
Swag is on the up, baby.
Swag has got the swag.
What in the world? What? Where was I doing when this happened?
You were shouting out to Devin Downey.
Shout out to Devin Downey.
Let me look here. Yeah, the MEAC in that year, the Norfolk State year, was the third worst league in all of college basketball. So that's going to, you know, kind of skew the numbers down a little bit.
Watch this.
As far as, go ahead.
Watch this transition. You ready? Okay. I'm done with the MEAC unless you got something else to say about it.
We're done with the MEAC.
Okay, good. Period. New paragraph. You know what Devin Downey did once upon a time? He beat the Kentucky Wildcats just like Yogi Ferrell did. Shout out to Devin Downey. Shout out to Yogi Ferrell.
So, I'm going to let Sam and you take this. So my only contributions to this are, so I drove up to Providence and I got to see the career's end for Ron Baker, Fred VanVleet. They were really great.
Oh, how about we could have done a whole podcast on those guys.
I know, we really could have. Real quick, I'll just be real quick here and then I'll transition.
I thought your story on them was really, really well done. And I know they appreciated
Thank you.
I know they appreciated it as well after you spent – I guess part of Wednesday or Thursday telling Fred VanVleet he's got no chance to make the NBA.
Did you really?
No. Here's the deal. Someone tweeted at me. They go, do you see VanVleet making the NBA, have an NBA career? And I tweeted back, and I was just a random person. I go, a lot of people have lost a lot of money betting against Fred VanVleet, but I don't see him as making the league necessarily. And apparently someone got that back to VanVleet, and then so I follow him. So, you know, you can get the push notifications on your phone. So I get this push notification like the night before – Wichita State's game against Arizona, and said Fred VanVleet favorited your tweet. That's actually really hard to say. Fred VanVleet favorited your tweet, and it was that tweet. And so I shot him a DM, and I was like, hey, dude, that's actually kind of awkward, but I'll see you up at Providence if you guys can win and get to Saturday. So they do, and then I had the interview after, and he gave me some good-natured flack for that, as he should have. But yeah, dude, great dude. And him and Baker, listen – that was those games, by the way, Yale making the push. Providence is another great, great sight. Miami getting, you knew that Baker and VanVleet were not going to go out like chumps. Like that was going, they were going to make their run. They were going to come back. They didn't get any favors with that early tip, but in terms of their careers, just awesome. Maybe I'm just having a brain fart, but I could not think of any other duo in college basketball that had played for 4 years, made the tournament every year, made a Final Four, been nationally relevant, had lifted a program to heights it had never been before, and they're truly interchangeable. And when Greg Marshall, we were kind of talking outside the locker room, when he said, it's Batman and Robin, and I don't know which one is Batman, I think that absolutely nailed it right on the head, because they each had such powerful facets to why they made Wichita State good. And you could easily make the case that Fred VanVleet was the most important player, but you could also say, hey, listen, without Baker doing this, this, and this, Wichita State isn't what it is. So they were great in telling me, you know, what they admired about each guy. Baker was on the podium crying, basically saying, I let Fred down because I told him we'd get back to a Final Four. And as he's doing this, I couldn't truly convey it in the column, but as he's doing this, Marshall, like, he's going ugly cry face and he's trying his hardest not to cry up there on the podium in front of the press, but he can't stop. Like, it's just such a powerful moment. So it was a privilege to see that those two and their careers end. And it, you know, 9 tournament wins. Here's a fun stat. Wichita State has more wins in the NCAA tournament over the past 4 years than any other program that made the tournament in all of those years. Kentucky was not in it the year that they went to the Final Four. Otherwise, Kentucky would have that number. So an incredible legacy. I think it's awesome. You can't say one without thinking the other. But as I'm driving home from Providence, hustling home, I got the March Madness app up, and I'm listening to Kentucky-Indiana game. So it was – This app is like the greatest thing ever. It really is. Like, I couldn't find it on the radio, and so I'm listening to Kentucky and Indiana as if it's the broadcast. Like, it is the straight up stream, and it was a great call. And I was this OG Anunoby is he can be. We'll see what they do, guys. And you guys can take Indiana, Kentucky from here. But I think that he has the greatest potential of any player in the Sweet 16 to kind of really blow up. If Indiana were to beat Carolina, he could become one of the stars of the second weekend.
We have breaking news. Jamie Dixon has accepted the TCU job.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Here we go.
All right. So I reported yesterday that he had the offer and was seriously considering it. And now – it is done. Jamie Dixon, after 13 years at Pitt, is going to be the next head coach at TCU, which is his alma mater. So we can talk about that a little bit later on, but I want to get back to I don't know why I announced that on the podcast like it was a radio show.
No, it's fine. This happens.
No, it's fine. Yeah, it's right in real time. I'll say something real quick on it. I mean, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, and I still have a pretty decent amount of contact with people there. Like, that thing had turned on him. You know, like, it makes sense that now is the time to make that move. You know what I mean? Like, he'd been there 13 years, and your alma mater doesn't come up every day. So the TCU is not necessarily the best job in the world, but it was time to make the move. So I think he's probably making the right call, assuming that the money's the same, right?
I was told the money, I think it can be more. Now, like, somebody, and we don't have to name him, but somebody who covers college basketball, writes about college basketball, whatever, reported earlier today that they were going to double his salary. He makes $3.4 million. So, like,
yeah, I was going to say, like, doubling. I think his base is like 2.6 even, isn't it?
It's Mike Krzyzewski money.
Yeah. So, like, doubling, yeah. Like, I don't, like, times two. No, I don't think it's going to be times two. But I was told by a source on Sunday that he had been told he will not have to take less money. Like, the money will be comparable. Like, I was told they're going to make the money right. That's what I was, that he, you know, and make the money right. Plus, there's no state income tax in Texas. It's why a lot of NBA players like to go there, and that was a selling point as well. But the larger one is, you know, at some point, if you're not appreciated where you're at, going 11 tournaments in 13 seasons, like, if people focus on what you're not doing more than they're focusing on what you are doing, that can be uncomfortable. Like, I don't want to say miserable, because there's nothing miserable about it relative to what other you know,
misery is
other misery is right, but it can lack something. And so now you go and you try to rebuild TCU, your alma mater, and they will be thrilled if you just get them to seventh. And
can he rebuild TCU the way Tom Crean has rebuilt Indiana?
Good segue Norlander. I'll be honest with you, I don't know, because you're talking about a Tom Crean who has won two outright Big Ten titles in a 4-year span, a Tom Crean who is back in the Sweet 16 again after playing a Kentucky team that was ranked in the top two in the preseason and dismantling them in the round of 32 to set up a matchup between the Indiana Hoosiers and the North Carolina Tar Heels. Norlander, your thoughts on Tom Crean's rise to the top of the college basketball world and the end of Kentucky's mostly disappointing season?
All right, so what you've done here is you're in the corner. We're running our offense. You're swinging it to me at the top of the key. I'm taking the ball, and I'm swinging it right there. Swing pass, cross court, get it to the weak side. Sam, why don't you take this ball and run with it? Here you go.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to see Indiana play North Carolina for sure. That Kentucky game was really, really good. That was a really fun game. It was back and forth. And that whole – with 8 minutes left, it was dead even. Like, it was 50-50 with – 19 field goals for each team on 45 attempts for each team. Like, you could not have had a more even game for the first 32 minutes of that game than Indiana-Kentucky. And then Indiana made its run. Indiana was terrific. Like Matt said, OG Anunoby is a legit NBA prospect, like, in a big, big way. I don't think he should declare this year, because I think he could be, like, a genuine top 10 pick next year.
Let me start right there. I was there in the preseason, and I watched him work out two straight days, and I was like, geez, he was good. And then I was like, God, I've never heard of him. So
I have no idea how people missed a 6'8" wing with a 7'2" wingspan.
I was like, no idea. I was like, he's really talented. And I was like, why have I never heard of him? So I never, like, made a big deal out of it, because I didn't trust myself. I was like, I figured if all these recruiting analysts had seen him 30 times, somebody would have pointed out, you know what, like, this kid's really good. But he's really good.
No, and the biggest thing with him is he, like, really cares. Like, he gets down and defends like crazy. And, I mean, I don't want to say he, like, locked up Jamal Murray. Like, Jamal Murray still had 16 points on, like, 16 shots or something. But he was really good on Murray. He had a couple of blocks on jump shots. He had, you know, a couple of steals and dunks. Like, it was a really impressive performance. Like, I mean, you don't want to throw around, like, the Kawhi comparison, but, like, that's what it was reminiscent of, at the very least, on the college level. You know, just a guy that is a freak athlete with freak measurements goes out and just kind of takes over a game for a little bit of a stretch. I mean, I was really impressed, and I think that some people are a little overshooting what his draft stock is this year, because, again, we're still talking about a guy that's, like, you know, playing 15 minutes a game, and, you know, he's, you know, not even shooting a three a game, and he's just not fully developed yet. Like, he can't really handle the ball yet, even. And but if he continues to develop in that Indiana system, which is awesome to develop in, he's got a shot to be a top 10 pick next year easily. But, you know, beyond him, I think that, you know, the key here was Thomas Bryant just destroying that Kentucky front court in a way that isn't terribly unexpected, given what we saw from Kentucky this year, right? Like, you know, that was their biggest problem throughout the year, and it ended up biting them. That should come as a shock to no one. And, you know, the Tyler Ulis Yogi Ferrell matchup lived up to the hype. It was great. Ulis did not deserve to lose that game, but everyone, there has to be a loser in a game of college basketball, and Ulis ended up being on the bad side of it after Yogi Ferrell just led that nice little run with about 6 minutes left. And his career is going to be coming to an end, because it looks like he's going to declare for the draft. And he's another guy that, you know, I think is probably going to be a top 20 pick this year. So I really, really love this game. I think that, you know, Matt said that he thought Notre Dame Stephen F. Austin was the best game of the tournament so far. I kind of think it was Kentucky-Indiana, because, man, was that game, just the stakes were so high, and, you know, the drama was so real. Like, that did not feel like a round of 32 game. That felt like an Elite Eight game to get to a Final Four to me, and it was just incredible to watch the entire way.
All right, well, let's take it a step forward then and look ahead to the Sweet 16 matchup. And there's three of the Sweet 16 matchups, specifically between Indiana and North Carolina. We're going to get to all the games on the Wednesday podcast, but there's three that I want to touch on before we get out of here. First is Indiana, North Carolina. Norlander, can the great Tom Crean get this done, or is he just outmanned too much?
He can get it done. I had Kentucky over Carolina in my bracket. I would strongly consider Indiana's chances here with how it played against Kentucky, how it got up against Kentucky, how the defense has been better, how good the offense has been overall. Liking a lot of what I'm seeing from Bryant. If you tell me Troy Williams plays to the best of his ability, then I think they'll have a really good chance. This obviously is the best, it's the one that we would get the most pub, biggest marquee going into Sweet 16, as it should, you know, two of the greatest programs in the history of college basketball. Gun to my head, I take Carolina, but I think it's got tremendous potential to be really good and really entertaining. What you can get in these situations with the way both these teams play is if something gets away from either team down the second half stretch, this could wind up being like, you know, an 88-79 game where it's fun for about 30 minutes, but then we kind of lose its luster near the end. Who knows if that'll happen? Indiana will have a really good shot. And, you know, I'm just glad that we get one of these in the Sweet 16. But really, overall, as we'll talk much more on the Wednesday podcast, there's not really a bad Sweet 16 matchup, which, of course, is a result of having, you know, all these, you know, the big brands move on. And when Syracuse and Gonzaga are your worst teams, then clearly you're going to have such enticing games in the Sweet 16.
Speaking of two big brands, we got another one, Kansas-Maryland. Vicini, Kansas-Maryland, can the Terps upset the Jayhawks, or are they just too dysfunctional to win a game like this?
I mean, they can.
Right.
I mean, anyone that has that kind of talent, I think, has a shot at an upset, certainly, right? But just from what we've seen of those two teams this year, I mean, Kansas is – honestly, I think Kansas is probably the more talented team just from top to bottom on that roster. That Maryland roster really only goes, like, you know, six deep as far as guys I feel confident in. You know, Kansas can go 9 to 10 deep, and I feel relatively okay with who they have on the floor. And they're just a lot more experienced. They play better defense. They get more efficient looks on offense. They're more well-schooled. It's just a really impressive group. And, you know, I've been saying the entire time, Kansas is my pick to win the national championship, basically from the beginning of the year. And this Maryland team was one of the teams that I thought could be relatively disappointing, and they haven't lived up to, or they have lived up to that hype, despite being a Sweet 16 team that got a relatively easy road with South Dakota State and Hawaii in the first two rounds. So I think that I am interested to see if Maryland can finally bring the pieces together, and they certainly have the talent to do that. But based on what we've seen so far, it's pretty difficult to pick against Kansas in that one.
And Norlander, the last one I want to get to before we get out of here is Duke, Oregon. I think we all keep waiting for Duke to lose and for its season to be over for a variety of reasons. This isn't the most talented Duke team in the world, and it's certainly not the most healthy or the healthiest Duke team in the world. But if you've got two first-round picks and a Plumlee? Like, is that enough? Two first round picks and a Plumlee. Can that get it done?
Maybe. How about Plumlee, though? Like, he is a man child out there. And listen, he's done Army training. He's going to work in that capacity going forward after he graduates. He actually, I don't understand the exact terminology, but he's going to pursue an NBA career, but also will represent the Army and kind of and stump for that as well. And it's really kind of awesome to see like how passionate he is, like him going up to every Duke player in that timeout in that Yale game and basically shaking them to life, saying, "You dudes are not losing this game. I will kill you all." It's amazing. Ingram,
he's like a crazy person.
He is, and it's so entertaining. It's really, really entertaining to watch, and terrifying. Ingram, he is just, I'm loving this kid's game more by the week. He, especially against Wilmington. Listen, Duke got pushed in both of its games, and I think a lot of people will like Oregon in this one. I do too, but I want to see what Chris Boucher does down low. Sam, do you think they'll put Boucher on Ingram? Because I think that's the move you have to go with, right?
No, I think they'll go either Cooker, Brooks, or maybe even Jordan Bell. Jordan Bell's the better defender out of
Boucher. Yeah, I guess. I think, Bell. I don't know. I think with what Ingram's style is, I think he would have his way with Bell. I don't know. Boucher's the best.
I think the problem would be he'd more have his way with Boucher and get him into foul trouble. Just also because possible. Boucher's footwork
isn't great. It's super fascinating because I think Ingram's going to have a really good game against Oregon, but I think Oregon will have more that will give Duke a lot of trouble with his offense. I think Dylan Brooks, this is now, like, he was, to me, Dylan Brooks is why Oregon's still in the tournament. They really should have lost to St. Joe's. That was the last game of Sunday. Also, a really fantastic way to end it. St. Joe's was up 58-51, and they kind of lost themselves there. We had a number of teams, guys, that were in control and really heading toward a victory, and then there's the pressure of this freaking tournament. It can just rip you apart, and that's what happened there. Love Dylan Brooks' game, and I'm going to give Sam credit here because he was really big on Tyler Dorsey from the start. And more, like, Dorsey's become, like, he can really, you can count on him from three. I like what he does overall. I will pick Oregon, but I feel it's kind of toss-up-like. And again, Krzyzewski, Duke tournament, we'll see. But I'm glad we touched on that, GP, because to me it's a very intriguing game overall because I have these teams ever even met ever? Like, I can't ever remember a Duke-Oregon game, period. So it's fun when the tournament can give us something that we don't ever usually see.
It's a big-time Nike game. Big-time Nike game.
It's a great point.
Big time Nike game. A lot of Nike influence is going to be on the court there. Two pros and a Plumlee. You can use that if you want to. Hashtag it if you want. Two pros and a Plumlee.
There we go.
Go ahead. Repeat it. Yell it back at me.
Wait.
Right now? Like...
Yeah, right now. We're practicing. Two pros and a Plumlee. In case you have to do a radio interview or something and somebody asks you. So, Duke's been underwhelming most of this year relative to preseason expectations. They dropped out of the national rankings at some point in January, and yet they're playing a number one seed here, Norlander. Do you think they have a chance? And if they were to upset Oregon, why would that be? And then what would you say?
Two pros and a Plumlee.
There you go. Perfect. See how that worked?
Yes.
All right. Use it. Use it whenever you got to use it this week, okay?
Oh, my goodness. This is just an amazing time of year. What hour is it right now?
You know what time I went to bed? 5 a.m. I went to bed at 5 a.m. and I got up at 7:30.
Beat me.
I'm dying. I to finish writing, because I didn't even get out of the television studio till 1:30 in the morning. And I saw you talking stuff about me in that group chat, Norlander, acting like I'm not.
You saw that?
Yeah,
saw
I saw it.
I love how you scroll up. We had so much to do last night, and they were asking for like thing after thing after thing, and we're glad to do it. But I go, shout out to Gary Parrish, who's lighting cigars with his $100 bills right now, not having to worry about this stuff.
You think? Yeah. Like, what was that about? It wasn't like I was like laying in bed.
Well, I know you're watching Netflix. Legitimately working.
Yeah, I'm like doing television. That's work too, Norlander.
Yeah, then Parrish like submits an article at like 2 a.m. to like my time.
Yeah, 2 a.m. your time, which is 5 a.m. my time. Yeah, I was up till 5 a.m.
On that,
you scumbags were asleep way before I was,
and I was awake,
I was awake way before you were. Norlander, apologize. I know,
but you never sleep anyway. So this is just who you are. Like, you can't sleep. Period. You sleep. You average like 3 hours a night. It's who you are as an animal.
I hate myself so much.
But I was too.
Listen. I'll here's the truth. I kept walking around. I like cleaned the mini bar out in my hotel room, and I don't mean like with vodka, like just Red Bulls and anything. Just anything I could like do to keep me awake. Like I was like drinking Red Bulls and grabbing a Kit Kat and whatever. Like I really just, as we're recording this podcast, I just got the receipt like emailed to me from the hotel. I like did $50 worth of mini bar last night without even any liquor whatsoever. And so I woke up at one point. I didn't even know what happened. I was sitting in my bed with my computer in my lap and I had fallen asleep like in the middle of writing a column. That's how tired I was. I woke up and I was like, oh, wow, I wonder how long I've been asleep. I fell asleep for like 12 minutes.
I had people coming up to me on press row in Brooklyn saying, listen, you look terrible. Like,
that's
I'm
sweet.
Sorry. Like, and I that's was sweet. Like, thank I know you. It because, and like, I still have a cough. I was sick. I was trying to conduct interviews and like, I would straight up have to be like, give me 20 seconds because I have to go hack my brains out. It was, listen, this grind is hard, GP. I understand. I'm right there with you. And,
wow. Wow. Yeah. I saw what you wrote.
Hey, listen, I ain't afraid to say it.
But no, here's the thing. If I thought you were really like talking behind my back, I know you wouldn't have put it in the group chat. So I can respect that when you put it right in my face.
I never talked about it. Was no, within the context.
You can talk about it.
But you got where
back.
I was coming from, right? Because within the context of that,
sure.
It was like 2 a.m. and we still had all this work to do. And I was like, freaking, I could really use Parrish's help right now.
Hey, I'm sorry. Some people have to talk on television and provide expert analysis, Norlander.
Listen, you're
verbally.
Living that life.
God,
I don't terrifying. Begrudge you for it.
Well, it seemed like you did. I mean, the group chat seemed to suggest that you do.
No, I didn't. But you'll notice it got a good laugh out of everyone. So
all right. Yeah. No. Well, that makes me uncomfortable too. That everybody thought that was the funniest.
On
ever.
The record. I want on the record, okay, it wasn't enough that we basically gave Parrish an Irish wake and told him how amazing and great and amazing of a colleague he was earlier this season. I want on the record right here that Parrish actually is one of the hardest working men that I know in the media business. That is legit. That is legit. And so I can give him crap for having to work 14-hour days on television while the rest of us in the beehive are stuck kind of churning out content on the website overall because he does many things. Like right now, he wants to get off this podcast because he's got to go do his radio show. Yeah. Which pays him very well, and I understand it's a hard time.
Why do you keep talking about how much money I make? That's the second comment you made.
Listen, does it make you uncomfortable, GP?
No, but it makes you seem resentful. Like you make a comment like, "Oh, he's lighting cigars with $100 bills," and now you're like, and now you're like his radio show, which pays him
because
a lot.
You share the gifts of that stuff in the Slack chat, so I figure it makes.
I make enough money to be able to have the Kimoji app, and that's all that really matters.
That's also a great point. That you have now started just communicating Kimoji over text message.
Dude, I got three of my buddies. We're in the like they're all gamblers, so we're in this group chat forever. Like we're just constantly talking crazy, and we have completely turned to communicating with each other with nothing but Kimoji.
Dude, you're sending these Kimojis. I'm on press row at the tournament, and I've got iMessage up, and I've got oh my gosh, I got to close this thing out. I can't have people behind, like literally, not joking. 13-year-olds behind me, going, "What is that?"
I'm not even joking. I got no stocking Kimoji, but like, I don't know why everybody doesn't have Kimoji. It is so good. Kimoji is so much fun.
Oh boy,
you should get
where
it.
Have we gone?
You guys should get Kimoji. Promise me that before we talk again. Well, I need two things.
I promise you that, GP.
I need two things from you. I need you, before we talk again on Wednesday, I need you to promise me that you'll have Kimoji. And then secondly, let's practice. Vicini, it's your turn. If you're doing a radio show this week and somebody says, so Oregon-Duke is an interesting 1-4 matchup, but the Ducks are the favorite. On the other hand, Mike Krzyzewski's got a limited roster, but still, it's Coach K, winningest coach of all time. Sam, you cover college basketball for CBS Sports. If Duke were to upset Oregon, why would it happen?
Well, you know, they got two pros and a plumber.
Yes! Yes! Isn't that perfect? if you could put a Kimoji on a podcast right now, it would be the one of Kim shaking her butt. That's the one I would use. I got to host the radio
what
show.
What is going on?
Hey, I got to go because you have no idea how much they pay me to do this radio show. Okay? So I got to go host that right now, all right?
We'll talk to you Wednesday, buddy.
I'll talk to you Wednesday, buddy. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the quickest way to get your hands on the latest episode. Go do that. We'll be back soon. Bye-bye.